This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, we're continuing my week at the Magic Castle 2017 with a few conversations with some friends I ran into while I was at the castle one evening, and I thought it might be of interest to share these chats with you. First off, we happened to be down in the Palace Bar area after the Palace show had let out, and ran into Gay Blackstone, whom you know, of course, as being Mrs. Blackstone, Harry Jr.'s wife and assistant, and also most recently, the last four years, she's been producing the series called Masters of Illusion, not only the television show, but also going out on tour around the country and the world for that matter. Anyhow, so we get a chance to chat with her because I think it was quite timely because the new season is going to be starting up here very soon. And she talks a little bit about that in this podcast then as well. In fact, I believe since this is being released on Thursday of June 29th, I believe it starts tomorrow night on the 30th. So if you're listening to the podcast today, then it's nice and fresh, and you can set your DVRs to watch this tomorrow night, the 30th, which I believe is the opening of the new season, the fourth season, I believe, of her new series. And as I turned around, sitting in his usual place there at the Palace Bar, was the creator of the Magic Castle, the builder, and the brother to Bill Larson, Harry was, Mr. Milt Larson. And so we had a nice chat with Milt, kind of getting up to date on what's going on with him and some of the projects he's still involved with. And goodness sakes, you know, this gentleman, who is into his 80s, is still every day working on some new project and has no end in sight. And I think that's great to see him in such good health and a mind, body, and spirit. That's great. And then a little bit later, I ran into a friend of mine, Alan Gittleson, and I think he has kind of a fascinating backstory. And many of you do not know who Alan is outside of the LA area, and he's only been a member of the Magic Castle, I think, for a short time by comparison with some others. But he was someone also who had assisted Banachek and me with the editing of the Psychological Subtleties books. And so he's a mentalist as well, but also he has a very interesting technical background, having worked on some projects that ended up like with the Minority Report movie, which was with Tom Cruise. I believe it was a Spielberg movie. He talks a little bit about that. So I think that's kind of interesting to hear all that. Anyhow, so we have these chats that we're going to be having with these folks here today, and I hope that you enjoy it, and be sure to go to the blog at themagicwordpodcast.com where you can see some photos and read a little bit more about the timestamps and whatever else. But I always encourage all of the listeners to be sure to subscribe, so this way that you don't miss another episode whenever it comes out new and fresh every Thursday morning. And I want to remind you that just in a few short weeks that I'll be traveling then to Louisville, where we'll be suspending my week at the Magic Castle for a little while we do daily updates from the convention, so this way that you know what's going on at the combined IBM and SAM convention. Well, more of that later, but as for now, please welcome my guests here this week on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for themagicwordpodcast.com, and we are still at the Magic Castle here in Hollywood, California. Never know who you're going to be running into, except I always expect to run into Gay Blackstone at the most wonderful and interesting places, so I'm not surprised to see you here. Hello, Gay.
Hello there, Scott, and how are you tonight?
Fantastic. It's always a great opportunity to see you. It's usually at a magic convention or something. You're always in Colon, of course, at the get-together.
Well, I try to make as many conventions and things as I can because, you know, I am always scouting for not only new talent, but for our old talent to see what new things they're doing, because season 4 of Masters of Illusion goes on the air June 30th, 8 p.m. on the CW.
On the CW.
8 o'clock and 7 o'clock. And who knows, if all goes well, I'll have a season 5, so I must continue to scout continually. So everybody, let me know what you're doing.
And also with that, how many episodes are there going to be in this?
Another 13 episodes. We start June 30th, and we will be going through the 1st of October, so Friday nights, 8 o'clock.
And you're scouring the world. You look
absolutely
for talent all over the
this place. Year, we had a quarter of our performers were from out of the U.S.
Oh, really? Really?
So I am looking for people everywhere, female, male, mm-hmm. everything you can imagine.
And I'm mentalism close-up?
Mentalism yeah. close-up. We have a gorgeous new close-up table. Oh. We have a camera overhead.
Nice.
We are and remember, I cannot repeat anything that's been done before in the past 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how hard that is?
Well, there are, 40,000 or so magicians in the world, you know?
And I need them all.
Yeah. And how will they get in touch with you if someone is interested?
Gay@AssociatedTelevision.com. G-A-Y at, spell it out, AssociatedTelevision.com.
Got it. That's easy. And do they need to then send you links to their videos?
Send me video, send me anything you can, because mm-hmm. I need to see. I also need to have bios, I need to have pictures.
Right.
Everything you can send me, I love it all.
And the nice thing about this also is that it's not only for the television show, but you have then a tour that goes.
Yes, we tour around the world. In fact, the tour leaves in August and we're off to Peru.
Oh, with the one that is going to be going on right now. In other words, the guys, some of the people who are in this year's television show.
You have to have been on the television before you can be then tour.
Oh.
Because we need to have good B-roll and things on you.
Of course.
So at that point, so there are six magicians that are coming out of the television series, and we all head to Peru in August. We go to Peru, and then we go to Colombia, and Christmas Shopping 101. I mean, it's great. I'm looking forward to it.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Well, the people who are going to be applying for that, you said that it could be a lot of close-up people, but I imagine it's kind of hard to get stage illusionists.
I love you know me. I am. To me, stage illusion is the opera of magic.
Yes.
But I love every type of magic, because what we do is, and because we work everything from arenas of 5,000 seats down to smaller places, you know, and we have video, we have everything in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So it's every type of magic in the that I'm looking for, because I use every type of magic.
Right. Right. But it's just my point being is that it seems that there are fewer and fewer illusionists who are out there. And if they are, they're out to sea. It seems like working.
Oh, I know.
There are not a lot
magic,
of places.
Magic is, you know,
yeah.
Variety is not dead. It's just gone to sea.
That's what seems to happen.
And I need them to come back. I need them back on land. I need them being creative, and I need them working for me.
Have you had any people who have been also on America's Got Talent?
Oh, I have a lot of my guys that are on America's Got Talent.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, next week, promoting...
And Britain's Got Talent, another kind
of... Yes. America's Got Talent. One of my guys is on America's Got Talent on the 27th, and then he's promoting Masters of Illusion, MOI,
mm-hmm.
for me on Baltimore on the 28th, Philadelphia on the 29th,
mm-hmm.
PIX in New York on the 30th. Oh, same person. So he's
yeah.
very busy. We're on the Today Show on July 7th with Farrell Dillon. So we're out there, you know, we're promoting, and we need everybody watching.
And I have seen that on the Today Show from time to time in years
past. We're on it again.
Because you're going to be getting ready to promote
yes.
the upcoming season.
And we have Dean Cain. We premiere June 30th.
Oh, Dean's going to be
Dean
host Cain, again.
Okay. Dean Cain is my host, mm-hmm. but he's also hosting the Today Show. So we're on the Today Show with Dean. So not that Dean will do magic. Dean is just there smiling and pointing.
Yeah. Has a pretty boy face kind of a thing.
Hey,
right.
Dean is
terrific.
He was
Superman, yeah.
He's Superman. He is my Superman.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was going to ask about that. How did you end up getting someone, obviously he's a celebrity, someone who's well-known, has a good face, and that he has good diction, he's an excellent MC and everything.
And he loves magic.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. No, but he doesn't perform. He just likes
watching. Oh, no, he does not perform. But Dean absolutely loves magic.
Interesting. Does he ever come here to the castle?
Dean comes to the castle. I actually, Dean was here with me for dinner a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
But no, Dean loves magic. So,
wow.
You know, well, there's a lot of celebrities that love magic. You know,
sure.
Through the years, I mean, we just lost Sir Roger Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Roger was one of my hosts for World Magic Awards.
I did not know that.
Neil Patrick Harris was my host 1 year.
Yeah.
Robert Wagner was my host 1 year. I mean, no, there's a lot of people who love magic. And just because they don't necessarily do it doesn't mean they don't love it.
Well, that's true. I don't know that Cary Grant ever performed, but he loved magic.
Oh, well, he did perform. And
did he?
I was his assistant.
I did not know that. Doing illusions or what did
doing
he do?
Illusions. He did the stove.
Do?
And Stan Allen, Diana Zimmerman, and I, we were his three assistants.
How funny.
I have pictures to prove it. whether we want them or not, but yes, they're black and white pictures of many years ago. But
if you have that, and you can
I
send
do
that to
have
me.
Them.
I will post that on the blog over here. Just send it Scott at theagicboardpodcast.com.
I will post them because they are there, and let's just say it was a couple of years ago. I was very young, but you can readily
all.
but you can readily tell that it was Cary Grant.
There are a lot of famed celebrities who are involved and also who belong here to the Magic Castle.
Yes.
Never who you're going to run into here then as well.
Exactly. You know, mm-hmm. in between anything from Johnny Depp through Nathan Fillion to, you know, I mean, there's just, there are a lot of celebrities. I mean, Barbra Streisand does a wicked card trick.
What? I didn't.
Oh,
what?
You better do not ever try to cheat Barbra Streisand.
Seriously?
In a card game. Oh, she will kill. Those nails will go
she
after
you. She can bust you, huh?
Oh, she can. You better believe it. So beware.
Now, what about her husband, James Brolin? James Brolin?
I've never seen him do a card trick.
Okay.
But he smiles and laughs at the appropriate places.
You can't ask more than that from an audience.
I love it. That's what I want.
Yeah. So again, the series begins on the CW beginning when?
June 30th, mm-hmm. 8 p.m. or 7 p.m., depending on where you are in the United States. CW, so you're on one of the major major networks, and we are 8 o'clock and 8:30
and
Friday
set your,
nights.
Set your DVR.
Set your DVR.
Yeah.
We need all the numbers because we want to have a season 5.
Well, it's amazing. I like the way that it moves quickly, the way it's edited, so that you don't have a lot of stuff in between.
It's like you're
just picking the best, and you usually have about 6 or 7 per
That's
people
it.
Per episode.
That's it. We move very quickly.
Yeah.
Do not blink, because you will have missed it, and you're on to the next act.
And also, I guess that you film some people in different segments, so they may appear over a period of weeks.
We shoot in 4 days, and then I play Tetris and put it all together to make 13 shows.
Yeah.
And we're also going to be having a Christmas special this year.
Oh, really?
But, yes, that will be in December. That'll be an hour special. But right now we are...
kind of like Doctor Who, I guess they have a Christmas deal, okay?
absolutely. But anyway, tell everyone, set their DVRs,
okay. Pay
attention, watch, and...
tell me this, are the DVDs available of previous seasons, or will there ever be?
Okay, probably not. Not at this point, because Sony has bought all the former years, and they're sold internationally. Mm-hmm. So you can see yourself in 163 countries. So magic is wonderful. It is seen
it's universal. Yeah.
Seen throughout the world, and people love it.
Yeah. Just one last question. What was the best place in the world when you and Harry were performing that you enjoyed?
Oh, Broadway was sensational.
Oh, I remember hearing
about that. Still hold the record for the longest running magic show on Broadway. Mm-hmm. So Broadway was sensational. But you know what? Everywhere you work, that day and that night was also fabulous.
Just like tonight. Every one of the audiences
that
was my favorite.
Every place you work at that moment was wonderful.
Sure. Okay, thank you again very much.
Thank you
What's
so much,
What's your magic
Scott.
Word, by the way? Maybe my podcast, The Magic Words. What's your phrase? What's your philosophy? You've told me this before, and it can change. You don't have to remember what it was. But right now,
you shoot an arrow into the air, and where it lands, that's the target.
I love it. That's the best. Thank you very much. That was Gabe Blackstone.
Good night.
And for The Magic Word Podcast, this is Scotty out. Hello, this is Scott Wells for TheMagicWordPodcast.com. We just finished talking with Gabe Blackstone, so I'm sitting down here at the bar. What is the name of this bar? What's this one called?
Which one?
What is this bar called? Which is this one?
This is the Palace Bar.
The Palace Bar, okay.
It's a guy, you're down in the close-up room.
Yes.
And then there's the main bar, then there's the Palace Bar, the Owl Bar.
The Owl Bar,
all sorts of bars. But I end up, usually, I just went in to, like, really crass, selling my tie, I guess. But so this is the Palace Bar, though.
The Palace Bar, where we are right now. And for those of you who just heard his voice, this is the builder of the Magic Castle, Mr. Milt Larson. Hello, Milt. So good to have you on the podcast. Are you still doing your podcasts for the old time music radio thing?
Oh, sure. Okay. It's not a podcast. It's just for the radio. It's on the cable radio network. And CRN, Cable Radio Network. And I've been doing it for about 25 years. And I play these old records from the whole concept. The name of the show is Hear Them Again for the First Time. And the thing is that the theory is that young people today have no idea about some of these things that were done 50 years ago or 100 years ago. They don't, you know. Right. But when they listened to him, a lot of the young people came from the old thing. I'm a great believer in that. History is very good.
Sure.
So at any rate, so when I play these old records, they say, oh, that's pretty good. Well, that inspired Elvis Presley and maybe whoever it was. And they're old now. And
yes.
The cool thing is, as old as I am at this point, is that, you know, the Beatles are old. Jeez.
I saw the Beatles live perform in St. Louis, way back in 64 or something.
But anyway, but that show is all about it. It's on CRN Radio. Mm-hmm. It's on a station called Yesterday USA.
And you can find that on the internet.
And that's on every day.
Yeah.
And then there's a station in Florida that happened to like it, so they're running it. So.
Oh, that's nice.
But I've been doing it. I love doing it. For your listeners, I want you to know, I have never made one nickel off of doing this stuff.
Yeah, just for the love of it.
When I was a kid, I was really enamored by the idea of just a microphone and stuff. Uh-huh. And so I always want to be a radio person. And I've been one.
Sure.
But it doesn't matter if I get paid for it or not. I do other things to get paid for.
And what you were being paid for years ago, now some people might remember, some don't, who listen to the podcast, was Truth or Consequences. You were a writer for that, is that right?
For 18 years I did that. And and that was all the shows that Bob Barker did.
Yeah.
His Truth or Consequences was started by Ralph Edwards back in the 40s. And the biggest hit we show is the thing, man, that Ralph did it, that he did This Is Your Life, and that was a huge hit. And then when I went on daytime, Bob Barker started doing it, and that was in 1956. Mm-hmm. And I did it for the next 18 years. Pretty good job.
Wow, I would guess so. You were the head writer then, or?
There were three writers.
Three writers, okay.
And there was no such thing as a head writer.
Oh.
Today. Bobby Larb, Jerry Payne, and me, and that was it. Mm-hmm. You look at TV shows today and look at the writers.
Oh, they have a long, big staff. And they come and go pretty quick.
P.S., you look at the producers.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
But what we were doing, I'm talking about 50 years ago, but...
those weren't live broadcasts, though.
No, Ralph Edwards owned the shows. He was the executive producer. There was a producer, Ed Bailey, two associate producers, and three writers.
Okay.
And that was it. You look at any show today, and it's the executive producer, the associate executive producer, then the assistant executive producer, and by the time you're doing that, then they get down to the associate of the second company.
Now, what do the producers actually do? You know, it's interesting you're talking about that, because I often see them watching a television show produced by, co-produced by, executive producer. I thought producers basically are the ones who kind of some money who back it.
Here's the way it works. Quite honestly, God, and my whole thing. Somebody sells the show to somebody, the network.
Okay.
And they come up with a budget. Mm-hmm. And then they say, well, who's got to produce this thing? Well, I have a team. I have a producer, and I have all of our TV things I did with Army Grant. We did, it was producer, associate producer, so very small.
Yeah.
But in today's world, it doesn't
cost so much.
Way.
Yeah.
It is. Now, if you really look at those credits, and I just get off on this thing, but if you really look at the credits on any of these shows, as they come up, the producer, then the associate producer, the executive producer, the associate executive. And if you notice, about two or three of those names are the relatives of the production company or the advertising agency.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Because in my day, we were lucky to get a job, okay?
Yes.
Yeah. We didn't care if we were called writers, okay? Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But And then as you go through in today's world, and I've tried to not even think about it, but there's a lot of people, of those hundreds of people that are required to make a show happen, that are, they're needed.
Yes.
Because the contractual obligation is my uncle gets a job, everybody else gets a job, else gets a job. But on the day of our Truth or Content, on those days, 18 years of doing that show, three writers did that show.
Wow. And, well, it was a lot cheaper back then, too. I mean, how much did it cost to produce the show versus today? I mean, it's hundreds of thousands of dollars for episodes now, I think.
Truth or Consequence is what we're doing. The budget for producing a show is $40,000 a week.
A week, okay.
Yeah, so $40,000.
Yeah.
Today, it's any show is like a couple of $1 million.
Yeah. Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
So that's why you need a lot of people to back that in agencies,
well,
et cetera.
The thing is, the business is the same. There's nothing different. Yeah. It's just everybody's...
Inflation. Everybody wants a piece of it, I guess, now.
We were talking just today about a place up in Montecito, but in the Magic Castle where we opened in 1963.
Yeah.
And... Joni Wilson was talking about it, and she said she got a membership for $35. Well, that's what it was. The memberships in 1962 when we first opened, a magician member was $35, and associates were $25.
Okay.
Because we figured, well, a magician would get more of it. For the
thing.
Now, so, today's rule, and I said, here's the thing. We looked at it, $35 in 1963 is the same thing as $900 today.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I know
buying power. So therefore, it's $900. Now people say, well, you're going to get $1,000 for a membership. Well, damn, it was the same way in 1963.
Sure. Yeah, $35 is a lot of money. Yeah. Back then. Yeah.
And I, as a writer on Truth or Consequence, was the first job I had with him in the 50s was my salary is $500 a week.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Writers Guild, which I'm still in and stuff now, 1 week of national television is a hell of a lot more than $500.
Yeah. That's true. Now, I've asked you this
And I was so happy to get $500.
Oh, of course. Yeah, that was a lot of money. I've asked you this story, I think you've told it before, but I'd like to recount it again. And going back to Truth or Consequences, I recall that one of the promotional things that they did was to request any town in America to change their name in New Mexico. So, tell me a little bit about that, the story, how that came
about.
Well,
that was before my time.
Oh, it was, okay.
But, no, I mean, it was my time, but Ralph Edwards, who's a brilliant man, one of the great people in the world as far as I'm concerned. But, anyway, but... At the heyday of Truth or Consequences on radio, and I guess first time in television, but anyway, they were always doing some great contests, you know, the Walking Man and stuff, and they said if any city in the United States would change their name to Truth or Consequences, then Ralph would do a show there and do the whole thing.
Yeah.
And what they didn't say, they left it up to the writers of the show at that time. And they got hundreds of things from people all over America that wanted to change the names or whatever it was. And so, a lot of them were in Alaska and stuff. And the writers, they said, I don't want to go to Alaska. So, one town called Warm Springs in New Mexico, where there's hot springs and hot and things and stuff, they would do it. This is a bump in the road and outside of Albuquerque. It's still there.
Yeah.
Very significantly there. So anyhow, the writers said, We're not going to go any place where it's cold or go any place where it's hot. But yeah. Albuquerque's not a bad thing. So they decided to call it for the consequences of New Mexico. And it held. And Ralph Edwards, true to his promise, every year would have he'd fly a bunch of celebrities and have a parade and that whole thing. And he did that. And I did several of them.
Oh, you did? Did the magic show for them?
Oh, yeah, I just did my act. But it's a...
Were you the magic carpenter? You weren't back then, I guess.
Well, unfortunately, I didn't have any acts I wanted to do. But the...
Well, you did an act with your brother, too, didn't you and Bill do an act together?
The what?
Did you and your brother Bill do an act together?
Well, when we were family, we...
Yeah.
We did a bit, Bill was an accomplished magician. Mm-hmm. He was, you know, when he was a young guy, he had a beautiful illusion show right up with the best of them. And my whole thing was, I just liked having fun with it, and so I was doing comedy and stuff.
Yeah.
So the whole Carpenter act thing just grew. It's a neat story about that. I was here one night. One day, and I was actually working on what was the third floor of the library here.
Yeah.
And I'm in my, Levi's and T-shirt and boots and stuff. And he called me and he said, "Melton, do you need anything for your act tonight?" And I said, "What?" "You're acting, you're doing a thing at the SEM, Assembly 22, and we're doing a thing of acts, and you said you would be there." I totally forgot it, but,
didn't have anything with you.
So months before they said, "Would you do it?" I said, "I don't know."
Sure.
So there I am, and he said, "Do you need any stagehands or props or load in?" I have no idea what I'm doing. Okay, so I said, "Well, what am I doing?" He said, "Well, it's comedy night, and you're doing your act." I said, "Uh-huh." "And where is it?" "Well, it's just down the street at the old Hollywood Women's Club, which is where they had their thing." And I said, "At what time is it?" "Well, we want you to load in at 5 o'clock. I'm still building the stuff out." So I said, "Okay." And so what I did is, dealing with what I had, is I put together a bunch of props. I said, "The funniest things in the world are things that
are common.
Complicated things, but they don't work."
Okay.
So I said, "Okay, here's an idea." So, and like 1 hour, I took a couple of little 2x2 sticks and put a tabletop on it, and all this stuff happened. I'm supposed to be there, so I loaded all this stuff in. And I had no idea what I was doing. And other than the fact, funny is funny, okay?
Right. Yeah,
so, and I'm a gag writer, so...
Right.
So I went in and did the show. They had to cut and restart rope, and I had an act, and I cut the rope with the act, and the table fell apart. But it was a fall-apart table. All this stuff. And to my surprise, I got the... first prize for the comedy act. I had no idea.
Sure.
I was just a crazy idea. So I said, "Hey, maybe there's a fun idea here." So then I started putting it together. That the Carpenter act has evolved.
Right. Right. That's funny.
I love it.
One other question I want to ask, and then we'll kind of wrap up over here. And that was about the Magic Castle. Now, did they make another Magic Castle, or you were having one built or something, and is that open, or what was the status of another Magic Castle? Was it here or in Germany, or Was there some place I thought that you were having another, you had franchised a Magic Castle somewhere?
Here's the thing with the castles. The castle was a very personal family thing. And we, over the years, 50 years, people would always say, let's do a Magic Castle, let's do a Magic Castle. And they would get down to what they call the balance sheet, you know. And we always said, there's no way this thing makes money. No way.
Yeah.
Now today, it's a multi-billion dollar thing, but maybe I was wrong. But anyway, so then the right now, the wind-up is, we have a little place up in Montecito, which is Santa Barbara.
Okay, that's why I was wondering, okay.
Santa Barbara, which is 90 minutes up to
go. And that's open and running now?
The what?
That's open and running?
No, God, no.
Okay.
We bought an old restaurant up here, and Arlene and I, I'm 86 and she's 70-something, but I don't really need another job, okay?
Yeah, I wouldn't think so.
But Arlene loves this stuff, so, and we've got this really nice old place up there, an old Mexican restaurant. And we decided to turn it into a thing. So what that's going to be, it's not going to be a magic castle like this one.
Yeah, right.
It's going to be a cabaret theater.
I understand.
Like something that I always wanted to do, which is a very tiny. It's just going to have a nice, it'll have a bar. It's not going to be a restaurant.
It will have a restaurant?
It won't be
well,
a restaurant.
Okay.
And it'll be in the old terms of, say, the cabaret with the floor show. And if you went to the Moulin Rouge in Paris and stuff, and a lot of what you call opening acts today were headliners at floor shows of that time. Marvin Roy and the Killingers, they would, in the center of a dance floor, they would do their act.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen today. Now, Vegas got stuff.
On stage.
And I'm trying to recreate in our little place up there.
That's great.
A old cabaret floor show experience. And what that'll be is we have a room, only be about 50 people, and they'll see somebody in the middle of the floor doing their act.
Yeah.
And but you won't see big illusions, and you won't see.
This is going to be opening?
Well, officially, if we're, everything goes together, we'll open the first of next year.
Okay.
But prior to that, we had a lot of problems in buying this building. Because it's a new roof and the whole thing, and liquor licenses and all that stuff. So we're going to probably have some soft opening things in November, December this year.
Okay.
But whatever it is, we're going to be off and running. But it's going to be, the wonderful thing about what we're doing is nobody's doing it.
Yes, sounds quite unique.
And when we opened the castle 54 years, nobody was doing it.
Right.
And I love this stuff. So it's a,
right.
I've got so many, we have a truck coming here on next Monday, and I'm taking two warehouses, warehouse garage of stuff that I had to build this place, but I still got it.
Yeah.
And you can't see this on your radio thing, but if you turn around, there's like that ceiling or the wall. I have enough wire of that to do another castle.
Holy moly. What the hell? That's in a warehouse stored someplace?
Hey, cool.
Yeah. Wow.
So, anyway, but the whole thing is that as long as I am breathing, the concept of anything in your life should be the next step.
And good point.
People that, sad things, a lot of people just get old and they don't like the job they do and they hate whatever they're doing and they play one round of golf and die. Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
At 86 years old, why the hell am I starting a new enterprise? But we got a couple of movies and stuff.
Right. Well, it's like a shark. You got to just keep moving all the time like that.
Yeah. But the main thing is, that for anybody, they say, is what life is all about is opening the next door. Opening the next door to see what's on the other side. And that is so cool because who knows? It's the old lady and the tiger. You know?
Yes, yes.
Hey, okay, tiger eats you. If
that's right.
But if it's a beautiful girl.
Yeah, you don't. It's worth the chance. Open the next door. Well, I was going to ask you what your philosophy of life or your magic word is, and you've just answered it right there. Just open the next door. That's what it is.
Cool.
Good. Well, Milt, thank you very much. I appreciate
you. Thank you.
It's very good to see you again.
I was going to come down and just see you. But
yeah. Well, excellent. Thank you very much.
My thing, I take the train down there every night up here. Huh? And, but it's so nice you're doing this stuff.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for all that you've been doing and have done in the past. Very good. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Milt Larson, and this is Scotty out. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I'm still here at the Magic Castle in Hollywood, California, bringing you just a few stories from people in and around the castle that I like to refer to as Knights of the Castle. Those are the guys who are the members, the backbone of the organization, and I've got a good friend of mine here, Alan Gittleson. Hello, Alan.
Hello, Scott. How are you doing today?
Fantastic. Good to have you here. Alan, for some of you who may or may not know, is a mind reader, mentalist, magician as well, and someone who has helped Banachek and I in immense ways behind the scenes that you may not be aware of. But if you go back and look at Psychological Subtleties, you'll see his name in there as being an editor. So he's been instrumental in helping Banachek and I get these Psychological Subtleties out. So again, Alan, I always like to thank you for that, not only being a friend, but for your business acumen as well. So.
Well, thank you very much. I'm very happy, and that's one of to have participated in that, and that's one of the things in my life of which I'm most proud. Those are great books, and it was great to work with both of you on it.
Thank you. So you've been a member at the castle here for how many years?
Since February this year, actually. I've been
in
and around the castle a lot, but
I always think of you as a member. Okay.
a lot of people do. A lot of people have been very surprised, as I always considered myself kind of a Groucho Marxist. So I wouldn't join the club because they would have me as a member. But I joined in February of this year, 2017.
So what is your number? Member number.
Should I say that?
You know?
Yes, I do. Okay. It's 21635.
Okay. The reason I mention that is because I know some people who have low numbers. They are proud that they've got like number 388 or 446 or whatever kind of a thing. So I just wondered how many that they have because there are currently about 5,300 members. So I was talking with Trish, who is the membership chairman, about this. And they're still looking for more members. And I'm curious. I guess that's a unique number to you, and that'll be retired when and if you...
Oh, really?
I guess whenever you die. They're not going to be reassigning that number to anybody else.
Well, hopefully I'll have it for quite a while.
Yeah, I hope so.
I know that Paul Green, who was the person who was my reference, his was in the 200s.
Wow,
so
he had
pretty
been
low.
A while. Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. It's kind of interesting that people can, and sometime after you get to be an old guy like me, that your number will seem low to them.
Sure, absolutely.
The new members. And you said you were starting to tell me when we were off mic just a moment ago that there was an interesting story.
Just a little brief anecdote. So I was on the way to the castle today to meet you, to talk to you today. And I was feeling a little hungry. I hadn't had any lunch, so I stopped off at just a Burger King that's, I don't know, maybe 7-ish blocks from the castle.
Yeah.
And I got I paid my money, and I got my change and my food. And in there, you'll see right here, I got all the $1 bills have printed on them, evidently with a laser printer or an inkjet printer, the 10 of diamonds in long print all the way along the back of the $1 bills.
That is amazing. And you got that just by coincidence?
Just completely coincidence at Burger King and changed $1 bills with in very nice, neatly printed the 10 of diamonds on the back of them. First, I thought it was just one bill.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, maybe some customer who had some magic performed for them, and then they dropped over there and they spent it.
Right.
But then I saw that all of the bills have have the writing on the back of them.
Well, oftentimes people will wonder, once they've signed a bill, well, what do I do with it? In fact, it's funny you're showing me this, because I just did a show last week, and there was an older lady. She was on a walker and whatnot, and I had borrowed her $20 bill. Ended up in an orange, and she had written her name. So at the end, as everyone was saying, hey, great show, and I was thanking people and whatnot, she came over and said, can you do some magic and actually remove my name from the bill? And I said, no, but I can exchange and give you a new one. And she said, well, I appreciate that. I said, and so I gave it to her, and she said, what are you going to do with it? Can you spend it? I said, well, yeah. I mean, you know, because you make all the jokes as far as it being illegal and all that kind of a thing. And I said, yeah, you know, it's just a bill, and it has some writing on it, and you just pass it off. And I mean, it's not been torn in half or something. If it's been torn, that's a completely different thing. You know, it's a little bit more difficult to pass a bill. But as long as it has most of it, I mean, people talk about that too. If you tear a corner off, it's still spendable, but it still has to have most of the bill there, you know, the serial number, et cetera.
Yes, I don't know if you've ever looked into it, but I have. But all you need is, I believe it's 51% of the bill.
Weight-wise? In weight or just in?
In content.
Okay.
And there is actually a government office where they are responsible for putting together bills, because you can, I believe, send the fragments of a bill that you have to an office in the government, and they have people to put them back together.
Wow!
And they will then reimburse you the money that you know, the bills, if they are actually have enough of the bill. But in general, yes, you just tape them together, and
right.
If you have the serial numbers, and if you have more than 50% of the bill, then you can get it. But if it's really very destroyed, very mangled,
right.
There is an office apparently where they take care of that, quite literally putting the jigsaw puzzles of money.
But now they couldn't put it all back together. In other words, they're not waiting for that other half to ever come in, are they? I mean, that
I don't. That would be fascinating. I wonder. That's a story, a good Magic Word podcast from that office. But I don't think it's that way. I think it's that, like, people have something that was very destroyed, went through a shredder, or who knows what kind of crazy accident,
say,
or burning.
Or
things.
Burning. For an example, you could burn part of the bill, and you have the majority of it left, and you just have a charred piece, you know, but it's 60% or whatever.
Right.
They're not going to get the other 40% because it's gone. It's an ash. So, you know, they're not going to put that back, but so they just will. That would be interesting to. It's a treasury, I guess, or how'd you find out there's even a department that does that?
Probably related to the Bureau of Engraving and Printing, because they're the ones that make the money.
In Washington,
D.C. Treasury, yes.
Yeah.
The Treasury just, I think they keep track of money, mm-hmm. but they don't print it.
So, when I have gone to the Treasury, local Treasury, there's one in Houston, and they give a little test tube of, like, you know, here's $1 million.
Oh, yes.
You know, with this very finely shredded. So if I were to send that to them, they'll put that back together, saying, yeah, there's 51% of a couple hundred dollars in there.
I am very sure that they take care of that kind of detail so that you can't do that, but you're very welcome to try it. Maybe you can put those two pieces of information together, and you can retire and just...
just send in test tubes of the
yeah.
of shredded bills.
Just buy it once, do it, and then send it in, get your money, and then just go in and buy out the whole store. You're set for life, Scott.
Yeah. I think I may have talked with you about this before for the podcast, but if not, I wanted to bring this up, and that was that a company where you used to work was one that was responsible for some of the technology that was used in the movie called Minority Report that was with Tom Cruise some years ago. And I think that was very fascinating, that the company would come up with stuff that's in the near future. For an example, that those of you who may not have seen Minority Report, different things. For an example, when Tom Cruise would be walking by in a grocery store, and they would say, you know, sir, we happen to have some pants that are on sale that fit you, or maybe by a grocery store, and saying that, you know, the milk in your refrigerator is about out of date, you need to come in and get some more, or whatever kind of a thing. What kind of things did, and you said Steven Spielberg had come in or somebody that?
Spielberg, I believe, was the director of Minority Report, and when he wanted to make the film, they got John Underkoffler, who is the CEO of Oblong Industries Incorporated, mm-hmm. the company you're talking about. They basically got John to be the science and technology advisor for the film, because he was doing work in the MIT Media Lab mm-hmm. and doing things with very, very futuristic interfaces of things, like using actual physical containers, for example, like a vase or something like that to hold data. And you could put that in the vase, and then you could spill it out, and you would see it visually, or
wow.
Moving things around in a three-dimensional nature. So when Steven Spielberg was brought on, John Underkoffler from the Media Library, Media Lab, they were working with three-dimensional things in the Media Lab that would have computer projections onto them and also cameras reading the physical objects. So, for example, they would have a table with three-dimensional models of things like architecture, like little buildings or walls or things like that. And you could place the objects in physical space and in that same physical space see the effect of sun or the wind and such, so that rather than manipulate objects within a computer and then see the results within the computer, you just really move the objects in three-dimensional space like humans do. But they weren't holograms, they're actual physical objects.
Oh.
So if you have like a little foam core model, which I'm sure if you've ever seen somebody who's in art school or design or architecture, they make all these physical models.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a projection onto the physical model so you can see a representation of the wind or this, or where the sun and the sunshine is, where the shadows are at different times of day. Like you might be planning for a busy corner and intersection, city planning or a building, and how it's affected by the sun and the wind. And you could see those effects shown on the space that you're actually working with, the physical objects. So you can very easily and very quickly, oh, what if I moved this building at another 20 degrees over?
Oh, okay,
I see the effect.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get those real instantaneous results. And you're working in three-dimensional space like human beings do very naturally. Because that we don't need the computer interface to be everything is like within the screen and we can't really reach inside there. But what if we just manipulate objects and work in the three-dimensional world that we all live in and that we all operate in, and if the computers can work and interoperate with us like that, that's a much easier interface for people to work with because it just comes naturally. Even a child who doesn't even have any language or computer skills could do it. So they could interoperate with the computer. So it's the interface to the computer is really all we have for the computer. You see that interface on your Mac or your Windows machine or your Linux box or whatever. And it takes some skill and some knowledge and training about how the computer is supposed to let you operate with it.
Yes, right.
But if it's more natural for a human being to operate with, then we can have other ways to interface with the computer.
Got to make it user friendly, as
yes,
you said
so,
that as well. Yeah.
So completely user friendly. Yes.
So they can quickly pick it up, and again, since it has nothing to do with language, that anybody could do from anywhere, in any language, whether they speak Japanese or Russian or whatever.
Absolutely. Yeah. As for example, the mezzanine product of Oblong Industries has a wand, very, very appropriate for the Magic Word podcast. It has a wand, and you pick up the wand, and with that wand, you can manipulate objects that only exist virtually that you can see on the screens. So if you have, let's say, a photograph on the screen, or it could be a video as well, you point the wand at it.
Right.
It's referencing the three-dimensional space that you're in. It knows where the wand is. It knows where it's pointed to. People can see what you're pointing to if you just point to something across the room in our normal human world.
Right.
If they can see. And they point it towards it. They push a button. It's just like the grabbing, like when you close your hand on something and you take that object and you pull it closer to you to make it larger, like it's closer to you.
Sure.
And then you push it away to make it smaller and make it further away from you, like just like you would in the real world. Or if you want to move it to the left or to the right or to another screen somewhere else in the room, you can do that. And then other people in the room can do that at the same time with objects. And also people in other rooms that are connected to those rooms can all do that too.
Because and they can all anywhere in the world.
Anywhere in the world. They can all see the same thing at the same time. For their information is present in multiple places. They call it info presence. So instead of just telepresence where you see the other participants on the screen and hear them, your data, your information is also in the same place,
manipulate it together.
And you can all manipulate it together and interface and collaborate. You're in a three-dimensional collaborative environment. So
Wow.
It's an immersive collaboration.
So that's something, is technology is available now, or is it still cutting edge and they're trying to perfect it more? Or?
Oh, it's absolutely available and being used in many, many places around the world in offices.
But that's the kind of thing that the company was doing, and those kinds of ideas that people aren't even thinking of. I mean,
sure.
There's got to be a room like where there's a think tank of guys just kind of noodling and thinking of all kinds of far-fetched futuristic ideas.
Oh, absolutely. So what I just described to you is the product of Oblong Industries, but they also have, let's say, the for people in the magic world, like core utilities and things that make it work, the sort of the bare bones of the technology, mm-hmm. the SDK, the way that computer programmers would program things. And those are available to customers who purchase that, and they're also custom applications built. Mm-hmm. So you can have, let's say, a wall of, let's say, 30 by 3 screens. Mm-hmm. So you have a giant display wall that all displays as one wall of pixels, if you want. And you can control that with your bare-handed gestures, just like you can see in the film Minority Report. That interface exists, mm-hmm. and Oblong works with that. I've worked with some things like that.
Very cool.
You can put the pixels anywhere. So screens can be surrounding you, and you just manipulate things that are on those screens as if you're basically, like in the film, conducting the data on the screen.
You know, for a long time, of course, that magicians show science that as at the cutting edge as being magic because people haven't seen it nor know about it. Let's say like Jean-Eugène Robert Houdin, who had used electromagnetics, you know, with the Mirabouts, exactly.
Light and heavy chest.
Light heavy chest, exactly right. Or other kinds of things, Lumiere, who was showing movies, and it was, you know, and constructing a slow motion or stop motion looked like, you know, somebody's going to the moon or disappearing, cutting off a head or whatever, and that was just shocking at the time. And same thing like with apps, whenever that there were some, the initial phone apps were coming out, that they were like magic before it came to a point that it's like, hey, that's, you know, that's a cool app, where'd you get it, as opposed to you doing, you know, that kind of a thing. So have you ever used some of these ideas or something in your mentalism routine or in your magic routine?
I don't use technology like that in my performing. Mm-hmm. I'm extremely low-tech. Mm-hmm. I'll say that because of my training and specific skill and knowledge area, I've been working for 20 years in testing high-end new technologies. And my job is to identify where they can break, where they will break, and make them break. And basically, all these things are made by people, and people have flaws. We're imperfect,
yeah.
And so do systems and things that we make. So I'm exceedingly aware of how things can and will fail.
So that's why you go low tech.
That's one of the reasons that I go low tech. Also, when people are going to experience something, certainly you can use technology. We all use technology to some degree for performing, whether you're using a pen and
or
paper.
Yeah.
Pen and paper is technology. Didn't always have that,
example.
Yeah. But when it comes to, let's say, for example, transmitting a piece of information from one place to another, what's the first thing that a person who you're performing for may guess? Oh, there's somebody in the room, and they know of a ways to transmit data over long distances very quickly, so they may jump to that mind of the technology. And I just keep the tech out of it, and it also keeps my head space in a different space.
You don't have to worry about something going wrong.
I don't have to worry about something going wrong, but also I suppose to a degree it allows me to separate the two different types of work that I do, both the performing work mm-hmm. and the working with high-tech stuff into like different spaces, just maybe separating parts of my mind, if you will.
Yeah, wow.
But certainly we bring up what I do brings up the idea of some things about technology and how people interact with each other, how people interact with machines.
Mm-hmm.
And I have conversations with people about that, sometimes as a result of some things in performing, but it's not where I've really so much used that tech in my performing.
And mainly mentalism is what you do, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
I bill myself as a hypnotist and mind reader. I don't usually use the M word, a mentalist, to describe myself to people, but occasionally
people
here
is.
And there. There are so many different ideas of what people have out there, and just what I have chosen for me so far works pretty well for me.
And you call yourself then what?
I'm a hypnotist and mind reader.
Okay.
And it's really interesting to see people respond to that as well, because depending on the person, they will latch onto different parts of it.
Yes.
Some people will go, "Oh, wow, you're a hypnotist. That's really great. Oh, I was in a show once, or did you, or can you,
right.
and did you ever do this, or do you do hypnotherapy?" I get that a lot.
Right.
And then some other people will be like, "Oh, you're a mind reader," and then that's a completely different reaction.
Right.
And then some people respond to both. So it really tells me a lot about the person I'm interacting with mm-hmm. immediately based on what they respond to and what they latch onto.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm performing, that also gives me an idea of what might work for them, what might be something that they would key into, because I want to do something that they would find mm-hmm. interesting, engaging, and entertaining.
Well, you know, I sometimes refer to myself as a paradoxologist.
Great.
In saying, you know, that someone who is ology means a study of, and an ologist would be someone who is the studier, you know, studies.
Yes.
And so I study things that are paradox. And so it kind of makes, I have to explain what that is then to begin with. And so it's, I'm the only one who has billed myself as a paradoxologist.
That's great.
It's a bit different. That would separate. You got to find that little hook that's different from others.
Oh, absolutely. But, I have been toying with recently going back to something that I used quite a number of years ago, which is I'm an information artist. I do tricks with information.
Yeah.
And we live in the information age, and people are aware of data and computers. And I have that hook of that I'm to some degree living the life that a lot of people imagine as their sort of fantasy. Oh, you have like a Silicon Valley job. I actually worked in Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
I worked with computers and high tech, and people have in their imaginations
sure.
a lot about that world, and connect it with that I'm a mind reader and a hypnotist
mm-hmm.
as well. And that's a pretty good hook that's unique to me.
Right.
There are not that many people that I'm aware of that are performers who really deeply know both of those worlds.
Right.
Some know very deeply one of them, but not very often that you find the combination of both.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, thank you, Alan. That was fascinating. And let me ask you, since it is the magic word, and you listen, you know, then what is your magic word or phrase? What's your philosophy?
You know, my magical word is got to be gratitude, because I went to a seminar. A friend travels around the United States. His name is Dr. Brian King, and he teaches about the science of happiness. He does continuing education seminars for people in industries where they need to have that sort of thing, like nursing, doctors, all sorts of other professions. And one of the things that you can do to be more happy, and I highly recommend this to you and all the listeners of the Magic Word podcast, is to take a moment to think. And this is something you do on a regular basis. Take a moment to think about what you are grateful for, what
mm-hmm.
you have gratitude for.
Sure.
And just that action of thinking about it will make you happier. There's a lot of science behind that and studies that have been done. And additionally, if you share that with other people, what you are grateful for example, if you're grateful for them, or can be anything else, it doesn't have to be directly related to them, sharing that with people will increase your happiness as well. And I must say, after having done that, and I continually do this on a regular basis, I am shocked at how many people and which people respond very strongly to this, that it really helps them. And they take a moment to think what they're grateful for, and they're often grateful for some of the same things that I am. And then they start doing it as well, and the happiness spreads. And I've really been blown away by people I thought would never be interested in it at all and doing it, and they're like doing it on a regular basis themselves as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
so
fantastic.
Gratitude is my magical word.
And one to carry through life.
Yes.
That sounds great. Appreciate that. And so for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Alan Gittleson, and this is Scotty Out. All right. Well, I want to thank my three guests here today who were on the podcast, and I'm glad I had a chance to chat with them. It's such an amazing week whenever you go to the Magic Castle. You run into all kinds of people, and you'll also notice if you go to the blog, I really don't have any pictures inside the castle because you're not supposed to take anything. So I didn't get any current picture there of Milt or of Gay, but I do hope that you have enjoyed listening to them. And if you get a chance again, be sure and tune in to see the Masters of Illusion
Illusion new season, which will begin here on the 30th. And aside from that, I think I'm going to have to wrap up because it looks like that's about all we have time for this week. And so be sure to come back again next week for the part 3 of my week at the Magic Castle. So until then, stay well, get booked, and don't worry about your target. Just open the next door and shoot your arrow and have gratitude. I think I got them all in there. This is Scotty out.